I do think after this weekend, Hunter should be on serious guard.
It's not too cocky, but there's a fine line there, and he's running it.
Welcome, everyone, to Title 24, presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael. Got Ryan Villopoto there, my co-host. And before we get started, like always, need to thank United Motorsports. We appreciate you guys. And, of course, Quadlock and Boxo USA, some great partners, great product. And we appreciate all your support. And, man, just I want to dive right into it. RV, you were there this weekend in Washougal. We're going to do this recap. But before we get going, let's just do what all of our listeners and viewers were talking about and sending us questions. We got a sound clip from Hayden Deegan after his dub, the second moto. Let's roll that sound and start it from there.
I've been watching too much David Goggins and Andrew Tate. Those last few laps, I'm like, I'm putting my heart into this thing, baby. And man, it's nerve-wracking, and I'm sure it's nerve-wracking for Hunter, too. He's supposed to be winning these things, and I'm glad I could beat the American up front for all the fans.
Confidence there.
Right. So before we get into it, and again, like what we did last week, we'll integrate the questions into our analysis and recap. You were there. What was your initial reaction?
Well, I mean, it was, so start with the track. I thought the track was probably one of the better Washougal tracks to race on. Right. You know, watching Hayden, you know, first moto was a great moto. I mean, you can't ask for really any more, right? Get the whole shot. Pretty much, I think he led every lap. You know, that was a great ride. But honestly, his ride in the second moto was pretty unbelievable. I know that there was some 2 to 3 laps to go. He pushed it down into the 15s, 2:15s, where, you know, average for that for second moto was 17, 18s. And he just started laying it down, you know, love him or hate him. You know, Hayden is laying it all out on the line. And number one, he's showing up with this pressure on him. You know, like, I think that was a huge weekend for Hayden.
So I've been saying it, RV, we've been talking about it on Title 24 all year long. I've been impressed by what he's been able to do. We talked about him so much during Supercross, and you could see how he could adapt, how he would adjust. And his results speak for themselves in Supercross. He's continued to impress both of us and a lot of people, I feel like. I feel like the reason we're able to talk about it, and not to bang our own chest, but the reason that we know what he's going through, and I feel like I could speak for both of us on this, is we lived outside of the media attention and what in the spotlight he's been under since he was a little kid, with just how popular his dad has been and his sister. We lived what he's living on the motorcycle, and how he's been able to adapt, adjust, learn. You and I did that at his level. So that's how I feel like we resonate mm-hmm. with him. But I talked about it, like, you have these steps that you go through. And up until about the last 2 weeks, I said the next thing that he has to do is he has to find a little bit more speed. Because up until this weekend, I do feel like Hunter was the guy to beat. It was his to lose, because he could run really good laps for 235s. And if Hayden didn't want to rely on something, like rely on a little bit of luck or some misfortune from Hunter, he's got to find a little bit of speed. And that's going to be the next stepping stone for him to go that deep, to go that long, both motos. That's really what that's evolution for him. And based on what I saw and what you're telling me, we feel like he's made that next step.
I agree with you, Ricky. And here's the other thing too, is like, we've been watching Jet and Hunter for quite a while now, and watching how precise and almost perfect those two riders are. And now it's a little bit of, like, you know, I'm sure from the fans' perspective, it's a bit of some fresh air. Like, he reminds me a lot of watching, you race or myself hanging it out. Not the prettiest, but he's the fastest. He gets it done.
You find a way, right? You just find a freaking way, man.
Yep. You find a way. You're able right now. I mean, right now, Washougal Hayden was able to push and ride on his limit there and be consistent, have consistent laps, be consistently the fastest there. Guys, Washougal's no joke. With the transition between sun and shade, being that it's fairly one lined, you really got to set your passes up. You really got to be smart. The roost hurts unbelievable. Like back to the one line part, you're riding a lot in those guys' dirty air, which you're just eating. You know, that is one of the worst tracks for roost. So I think, just watching the performance, Moto One, Moto Two, mainly Moto Two for me, I to answer the question or to back you up is yes, I think he's made that next step, that next jump that he needed to do, with three rounds to go and the points now very close.
Right. To integrate, the questions, last week, obviously most of the questions were based around Chase and Jet because of how well Chase has been riding and everyone thinks he's going to take him down, which is a good chance he could probably, wipe off, the perfect season that Jet is having right now. But, now all this week, it's all about Hayden's. And Cassidy.Peacocks asks, how does Deegan's 1-1 affect how the last three rounds go? You take
number one, I think, coming into Washougal, Hunter had a 10-point lead, not a lot, but had a nice little cushion. So I believe that now that this points gap has shrunk and it's very close, pressure's on, man. Like Hunter cannot afford a mistake. Neither can Hayden. So it's going to be very interesting to see. Obviously you have a young gun coming in, and then you have Hunter a little more, been in the class a while, more of a veteran. It's going to be interesting to see how they both take their racing craft into the last stretch of the last three races. I think the pendulum has swung. I think Hayden has the confidence. He has the momentum in his corner right now, and with his starts being on a lot of the times, we know that Star Racing bike is probably the fastest motorcycle on the track. So, that's just another feather in their cap, lining up for these last three rounds, knowing that you have a very high probability of being up in the top three. I think that's been a little, if you go back from the start of the season, Hunter hasn't put himself in terrible spots, but a lot of his moto wins he's had to come from, third, fourth, fifth, and come up, but you give Hayden a whole shot and Hunter's fifth. Now we have issues. Now he's got problems. I feel like, he's really going to have to ride or override or push it a little harder than he may want to bridge that gap up to where Hayden, it will be, or if he does get the whole shot.
Yeah, totally. So Cody Rothschild, and it's a great second question. Do you think Hunter is worried about Deegan, or is he confident that this is his title? I'm going to, you answer first, and then I have.
Not 100% with the points, the way it is, it's motocross racing. I would say he is a bit nervous. I think that their program is very, very solid. Hunter's program is very solid. So I feel that, he's going to approach these next three races, no different than he has, the previous races, put himself in a great position. But like I said, we can't get away from talking about how close the points are. One slip up, like we saw at Washougal, push the front, Hunter falls over, and gives Hayden that race. Right. So, like I said, we only have about six motos left and can't afford any mistake from Hunter or Hayden for that matter.
Yeah. I text Johnny O'Mara this morning. I'm like, dude, no more gimmies for you guys. And he just basically says, no, we have to be perfect. And to back you up, And just to second what you're saying, RV, is, yeah, I mean, I feel like Hunter, he has got to ride superbly. He's got to get great starts. He can't override. He can't be laying on the ground. And to Jeremy Werner's question, yeah, I do think after this weekend, Hunter is for sure shook. Maybe not shook, but he should be on serious guard. Especially if Hayden is able to respond and ride like he did in Washougal. If he rides like he in Unadilla, like he did in Washougal, dude, it is game on. And I would think, to your point, the pendulum is confirmed that it is swung in Hayden's favor. And again, I go back to what you were able to accomplish, because I watched you do it when you first came on the scene. Once you made that jump, no one was going to beat you unless you beat yourself straight up. And I wanted to share this story with our viewers and listeners. So I remember, like, my rookie year when I was racing Lammy and Wyndham, dude, I'll be straight up. I would say, like, I was at a level the first four outdoors, I would say. But then when we got to, like, midway, I was a little bit closer. And then the latter half of the season, then I was finally, I feel like I was to a point, I made that jump like Hayden did this weekend. And I was kind of like worried, and you and I, we've had this conversation on Title 24 about, you're always playing games with yourself. And you're like, was that just a fluke, or did I really make that next jump? And then, by gosh, the next weekend I went back and I was still running up front. And you know that, you did the same exact thing. And that's where I feel like, if I was Hayden, I would be like, okay, can I do this same thing in Udilla? And if he does, if he comes out good in that first moto, oh, dude, it's going to be fireworks.
It really is. I mean, dude, it's so close. And yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, take Hunter's Southwick, right? Mishap, nothing that was his fault, just a bike, you know, it totally changed the trajectory of this 250 class, right? So we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if we wouldn't have had a DNF from Hunter. But it's motocross racing. That's what happens. Went there, DNF'd, lost 25 points, right? And it put Hayden right back into the mix. And he smelled blood in the water, man. And he was able to make it happen. I think that's the most impressive thing is okay, he got given a gift.
Yep.
But now what do you do with your gift? Can you use that gift to your advantage? And you know, a lot of guys cannot, you know, it brings even more pressure. Okay, now I'm only within 11 points, or I'm only within 10 points. Now it's close. Now it's on me to make up the difference. And that's exactly what Hayden did.
Yeah. And I think, dude, I mean, like, he has proven himself time and time again. Like, just go, like, people are, I know there's going to be some haters on what we're talking about. Like, oh, dude, you're just, you know, Hayden, you just love him, guys. But if you look at his history and his trajectory from the year, right, and Supercross and then motocross, every time that he's went through a situation, dude, he comes out the other side better. Mm-hmm. He's a quick learner. I know on Vital, he was talking about he learned something about the bike that has helped him out tremendously. Dude, same like yourself, same like me. Once we, you know, we keep learning, we are able to apply that on the track. I feel like he's learning that, like you and I did. And dude, I'm sure you can speak to it. Like, I know, like, once you figure that stuff out, it's only going to help you. And I just look at the research from this past year, and every time he has done something wrong, dude, he learns from it and he gets better. Rarely does he make the same mistake twice. Prove me wrong, right?
Yeah, no, go back. Anybody that's got a question about it, go back to the start of Supercross and pull the eight races and look at his finishes and look at his rebounds on some of the finishes that weren't great. Yeah. With outdoors, go back and look at every single moto and look where he started, look at his consistency, look at his pitfalls. And then, you know, then you can see that, you know, that it doesn't happen very often. It's probably going to happen again every now and then, you know, like, mistakes are going to happen in our sport. That's just what it does. But he's doing a phenomenal job being able to combat the the race wins from Hunter. And when he's struggling, like Southwick wasn't a great race for Hayden, either, both of those motos. I thought he was good. He managed his way through Southwick, but with decent points, but it wasn't great. And then able to just rebound, you know, here at Washougal a couple races later and go 1-1. So like I said, I think the pendulum has swung. I'm not saying it's swung into the direction where Hayden's going to win this championship, but I don't think a kid like that giving him too much confidence. Like we just watched the replay up on the podium.
Yeah.
And he's living on cloud nine, dude. And that's hard to, you know, race against a guy like that. That everything is clicking with.
We got so many questions. I mean, you saw it, like his podium speech, and he said it again, like in the post-race conference, like, do you think he's doing that? Like, is that,
like
what you think?
You know, I think that, I think that this is something good for our sport. And why I say it's good for our sport is having different personalities, going back and watching AP's podium speech, right? Like I'll bring him up real quick.
It's great to be up here. And yeah, that was a great moto. I got to thank the team. You know, my smoking hot wife back home. yeah, baby, let's go. We get 2 weeks off, so I'm looking forward to it. Go hang out with the family and do some cool stuff. And yeah,
I mean, to me, he just likes. I mean, that just looks to me like a Dale Earnhardt, you know, just like a guy that's just totally in. It was a great podium speech from him, having those characters, and I think that's what I think watching our racing is building these characters, and I think Hayden is doing a very good job like that. Like I said, love him or hate him. If you think he's cocky, if you think Brian's cocky. Yeah. I mean, I don't love everything Brian says. Do I watch everything Brian says? No, I don't. Do I think some of what he says, I'm like, oh, come on. Like, stop preaching at the camera type thing. But dude, they're putting the work in, they're putting the time in. And Hayden's showing up every single weekend. So I do like that he's able to throw it out there, you know, and be a little cocky and also too, I think it is who they are. He's been raised that way with a camera in his face for a very, very, very long time from a mini kid. And he knows how to deal with that stuff. And you know what? There's a lot of guys that can't deal with hearing somebody like that up on the podium. Like I'll use Jason Lawrence as an example with, you know, Ryan Dungey, completely different scenario, but still just that fly that never would go away. That was always bothering you. And he got in Dungey's head, for the Lights Championship for Supercross. So, maybe that's part of his strategy. Honestly, I think I do like it. I think it's not too cocky, but there's a fine line there and he's running it.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting for sure. I think I'm now, after an excellent performance that I've seen from Hayden, and like I talked about, that next step was to be able to run with Hunter two motos, and not having to rely on something, a misfortune from Hunter, because that's super hard. You know how that is. That's going to be interesting to see if Hunter is able to get feeling a little bit better. He made a quick mention about the bike on the post-race interview. So maybe they need to find a little bit more there on the bike, but nevertheless, I feel like his back's against the wall, and whether Hayden wins the championship or not, I think if Hunter doesn't win this championship, I think he underperforms. I think Hayden has overperformed. If it stopped right now, that's the way that I look at it. I mean, it sucks. It is what it is, but that's how I feel, dude. I mean, he's got great team personnel. You know that HRC team is great. His dad is really in tune. Johnny O is in tune. I mean, Johnny's worked with the best guys. So the race strategy is there, and it is straight up to Hunter. I mean, whether the bike is a little off or not, sometimes your bike isn't going to be the best. And I don't think that they're going to be able to get it better than that Star Yamaha. before the last three rounds. So he has to go out and he has to execute perfectly straight up. There's no two ways about it. And you know what? Maybe it's too late. Maybe Hayden can run that pace, dude, and wear him down. You know,
Ricky, do you think that strategy wise, let's talk about just starting gate position. Do you think that we already know that Star has one of the, if not the strongest bikes on the track. Mm-hmm. For strategy wise, do you think it would be, and I haven't really paid that much attention to where they're lining up, but on majority of the time, a lot of the guys, as you know, like there's only so many good starting positions or where you'd kind of want to be the sweet spot on the gate. But mm-hmm. do you think it's in maybe Hunter's best interest to maybe move over, say like 5 gates to the inside or 5 gates to the outside, depending on the first turn, to maybe get around some guys that aren't as good as starters or maybe not as good as bikes, to initially get out of the gate and not get closed off and be able to have himself in that top 3, top 4 spot in the first turn, instead of just going up where all the top dogs are and expecting to have the best reaction time. And at that point, even if you have the best reaction time, do they pull him to the first turn? Because like at Washougal, it's a long start with that little rise in it. You know, horsepower is king in that scenario.
Yep. No, 100%. I think he needs to do that at this point. I don't think that he should start next to Hayden. I feel like he needs to go more to the inside, separate himself from some other good bikes. And at the same time, I feel like he needs to play a little defense. I say he needs to go out and he needs to execute. In my mind, if I'm coaching him, part of that execution is lining yourself up in the proper position on the start, right? Based on where Hayden is. So completely, like, part of execution is not always playing offense. Part of it is you have to have a good defense plan, you know, and put yourself in position. I feel like if Hunter can be up in that top 3, top 4 on the start, that's different than being 7th.
Yes. Yep. So, no. And I think if he puts himself in that top 3, instead of coming from 7th, like you said, he's only got, you know, 2 or 3 guys to go through. And Hayden's gap at that point, let's say if in all scenarios, if he were to pull the whole shot and Hunter's 4th and he makes some quick work, you know, instead of coming from 7th and then you're maybe 12 or 14 minutes into the moto on a track like Washougal to make those passes, because we know it's a harder track to pass on. Mm-hmm. It just puts him in a better position sooner to where, because I think head to head speed, I think Hunter can go, as fast or faster than Hayden. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think with the way Hunter rides and his technical ability, I think he could close the gap on him. But honestly, second moto at Washougal, I don't know if anybody was closing the gap on that kid.
Yeah, we're gonna find out.
I just think, bro, he did a 15, and the next ones were 17s.
I know. I need to see, dude. If I'm saying it now, if Hayden backs up this performance at Unadilla, it is game on, dude.
And I think two good tracks for both riders. Deegan, Hayden, little Cindy rides close to the edge.
You can get away with more at Dilla.
Yep, big wide track, high speed, and then Hunter's technical side, you know, I think is going to suit him well at Unadilla too. So we should have one hell of a race if those two get off the line together.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Outside of those two guys, I mean, we've chewed up so much time on just the 250 class, and it was a lot like last week with Chase and the Jet scenario. Justin Cooper, I think he was in a great spot, wasn't able to make it happen. He's hanging on by a thread, but this isn't going to be a popular comment.
I mean, he rode very well. He rode very well, but dude, Hayden was just on another level. That second moto was able to mm-hmm. suck Cooper up. And then the pass for the lead, which I call it the mini Chuck Sun jump. You know, like just sending it in there, went really deep, landed in that hole. It didn't land on the brakes though. So the bike was able to recover, was able to pass him on the outside.
Yeah.
And then just literally just run away with it. You know, like at that point, I think Cooper Cooper knew he couldn't run that pace. He looked to be a little bit out of gas also. And he just kind of, let it go. You know, if that's the easy way to say it, let it go. He didn't have anything for him. He was just on another level.
Last one for the 250s and we're going to move on. We talked about, we needed to see Spring Creek till we base our decision on Hayden and, or who goes to, Motocross of Nations. And post 7941, he says, do you guys think that Hayden, goes to Des Nations for the U.S.? If not, then who? I think after this week's performance at Washougal, he goes. If he rides the same way he does in Unadilla, like he did in Washougal, then stamp it 120%. If not, I think you need to consider Justin Cooper, just because Justin Cooper, he raised up last year, did a hell of a job. But if he rides the same way, dude, it's stamp it. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I do. I think they're both great candidates for the lights class. I personally, if I was running Team USA, I'd have to go back and I'd pull all the information out of each of the moto finishes and I'd have to look and dissect it. But just off the top of my head, if you were to ask me to say, pick a guy, I know they're both gamers, but right now with Hayden's confidence and where he's at and how he's riding the motorcycle and just what I know that MXON brings and what you have to bring to MXON, it wouldn't scare me one bit to pick Hayden right now.
Cooper can't go. He's getting married that week.
That's right. Actually, I did hear that at Washougal. I believe Cooper has already said he's out. He's getting married.
Then with that, then for sure I'm going Deegan.
Yep.
He's gonna get better. Dude, he's gonna get better. From this point on, he's gonna get better.
Hey, and he's not a bad mud rider. You know, we know we're going to Europe in a way later time of the year. It's at Erne. Everybody knows how, if anybody's ever been to MXON or watched it, it's I know a lot of people haven't been in the inner circle, but dude, it's a very high pressure situation.
And he does great in those positions. He's been in it all year.
And he does great in those positions. He's got the speed, he's got the platform. That's one of the best platforms out there. So I think it's a win-win regardless if you send him, or if we pick him and send him, I think it'll pan out. Not saying we're going to win MXON, but I think he's one of our best guys to go.
Before we get going on the 450 recap of Washougal, let's thank our sponsors again. United Motorsports, unitedmotorsports.com, great company. If you're in the Ohio or Kentucky region, they got 6 stores. Check them out, and they have pretty much everything that you need. Of course, Boxo is in there. They're in stores actually in United Motorsports, Boxo USA. Check out their Instagram post. I'm always talking about their lifetime warranty. Well, they just made a post today on Instagram, Boxo USA, and they explain, basically they got a great tutorial on what that process looks like. So go check out their Instagram post. They just posted it this morning. And then of course, last but not least, Quadlock Case. Quadlock Case is, I think it's the leading case. They do a great job. Looking forward to using it. We are doing our adventure ride next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have the vibration dampener on there as well as it comes with a phone charger. So make sure you guys tag along. We're going to be doing live updates. So yeah, we appreciate you guys. Jet wins again. I mean,
listen, well, Ricky, let's I got one something real quick. Since we're on the topic of MXON,
yes,
it'll segue into the 450. I'm looking. Okay, we got Deegan for 250. Let's say he stamped that. He's going for 250.
Yeah.
450. We need two riders. And I know that, you know, we got AP. I don't know when Barsha is going to be back. If he's even on the motorcycle yet, I haven't really seen much about that. But then you, like I said, Plessinger, and Chase, Anderson rode better this weekend, still quite a, well, a long ways off. A third place that was way, way off, you know, but still, who do you think for the 450 class?
Well, I'm going to have to take your approach, which is a great approach. I would reach out to Fowler's Facts, Clinton Fowler. I would get a rundown of all the data. Won't have much on Barsha. Mm-hmm. I feel like Barsha, he loves Europe. So that is consideration. So I know he hasn't raced much outdoors, but I just know he likes that vibe. At least I feel like he does.
And he's a gamer.
He is. He'll race you hard. And dude, you know, like you can rattle those guys' cages. I wouldn't say super easy, but you can rattle them up a little bit. So he would be great at that. Plessinger. I mean, I think it's a toss up. I think Plessinger or Hampshire on the 450. I mean,
no Jason.
No, I was just going to say, if Anderson keeps doing what he's doing, I think that maybe you take him. And the reason that I say that, RB, is because he has championship experience and running up front against the best guys in the world. And I think that he's, you know, getting towards the end of his career. You know, he's 30 now, he's got a kid. So I think that the incentive to want to do well will be a little more elevated because he, you know, time is running out and he'll want to, maybe he thinks, or maybe this will be his last opportunity. So you have a little bit of extra motivation for that reason. And I feel like he's really embracing, the racing scene right now. So that's why I think that if he can continue to put in a couple more strong rides, and he will get better because he's going to have more time on the bike, I think he'd probably be the 450 guy.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think those are good. Chase, obviously, Plessinger, Barsha, Anderson. If Justin can get back out on the track here fairly soon and at least catch these, I know we have two weekends off here. So, you know, I would say, without knowing anything, that I would say it's probably a high probability that we're going to see him at these next three rounds, just because of the week that these two weekends off, get some more riding in if he's riding currently. And Justin's a gamer too. So I think for me, I would pick Chase, Justin, and Hayden for that, you know, cause like you said, Justin likes Europe, seems to do well there. And also he's another gamer. He can go race with the best of them in the world.
Okay. So you talk about that and you talk about Chase. When is the date for MX of Nations? Is it the 1st of October? If it's the 1st of October, I mean, is Chase riding at KTM?
Yeah. I don't know. See, then I don't know.
Then what do you do?
Yeah, then I don't know. I don't at that point. Yeah, it's a new motorcycle. It's not like you're going from aluminum to aluminum. You're going from an aluminum to a steel. October 6th through the 8th.
Ooh.
So it's gonna be a really close one. You know, I know the guys. I just watched Lommel yesterday, and it's no dude. It's no joke. The guys over there, like, I know Lommel's a little bit of it's a different track. We don't have sand like that, but the guys are riding unbelievably well right now in Europe. So it's going to be a tough one regardless of who we send over.
If I'm Sexton, and you just have to assume that he, you know, the transfer date from Honda to KTM is October 1. Only way I'm doing it, because listen, You got to think he's ridden the bike by now, right? So he knows what he's got, don't you think?
I would think he's been on it once. I would think he's been on it once. I don't think you do a deal of that size, of that magnitude, of that money, without swinging a leg over a bike, and a career change like that. So, has he been on it more than once? I doubt he's probably been on it more than once. Maybe twice at the most. But at this point, he's got to keep doing what he's doing and training on the current motorcycle he's on and his current program, because he's in a title fight. So, maybe once or twice.
So, that's what I was saying, like for Chase, only way you go over there on that KTM is if you ride that bike for the first time and the thing is exponentially better, where you know, like you're going from, let's just say a 7 and 10 being the best on handling, and you're going from a 7 to 8 right now to a 9.5. Like that's what I feel. Then Chase could feel comfortable, because I know for me, I wouldn't want to go on a bike that is not performing at the top level on one of the biggest stages that we ever see, you know, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to put myself in that kind of exposure. As much as I would love to race for the team and represent the country, I also wouldn't want to underperform for the country as well, you know, if there's something better. So that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
That was good. Good question. Jet wins.
well, another one.
Shocker. Okay, like what kind of controversy, or not even controversy, but what kind of story are we going to try to make up before Unadilla of why he might get beat? I mean, yes, Chase is riding well. He challenged Jet almost to the end this weekend, and looks like he hit neutral. I mean, I'm not even trying to make up no stories, dude. I'm just trying to, like, you just have to.
I think it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one. I think. I think Unadilla, I think, I mean, they both have, you know, great potential to go out and win. But I just think with Jet's ability to see what he sees, and, you know, it's almost like the Matrix for him in a lot of ways sometimes. Washougal, not so much, with just the track the way it is. A little one line-ish, shadows and things like that. No matter who you are, you go to that track, and that track tests your abilities to how close you can push the limits on Washougal, no matter who you are. So I think that's one of the reasons why, I don't say reasons, but I think that's why maybe it looked to be a closer race. I'm hoping that Chase can come out swinging at Unadilla. I always loved Unadilla. But with Jet's creativeness, with his creative lines, the way he rides the motorcycle, how wide and big and large Unadilla is, it promotes a very, as with a very forward thinker rider, you do end up doing very well there. So I think with Jet's mentality and the way he thinks, I think it's going to be very hard to beat him at Unadilla without a mistake from Jet's point.
I'm with you. I mean, listen, I saw some comments and stuff like that about, oh my gosh, Jet was making mistakes and all that. And I'm like, listen, guys, he's human. He's going to make mistakes.
How many mistakes me and you made?
I mean, his feet wasn't hanging off and he wasn't hanging on by one arm, kind of like you and I, like, well, we almost crashed, dude. We almost crashed.
That's what I was going to say. Have they forgotten what we look like?
I know, dude. Like, if the legs ain't, dude, if your feet doesn't come off the foot pegs, you're not out of control in my
mind. Yeah, a couple times a moto.
That's the limit. So he's going to be pushed to the limit. He's going to make mistakes. Yes, he is great. He's phenomenal. He does amazing things on the motorcycle. But dude, he's human. He's going to have slip ups.
I think the biggest thing, the hardest thing for Chase is I see, and I just kind of popped into my head just now is I think he has to bridge that next little gap speed wise, right? It's not a lot. It's just a little bit to really get to Jet's rear fender. And at that point he's on his rear fender, but is when he bridges that gap, can he put enough pressure on Jet without passing Jet to make a mistake? Because that's what I don't know or don't see happening. Not that it won't happen every now and then, but I feel like even if Chase bridges the gap to be on his rear fender, I think Jet holds it together. I think Chase has to really put the pressure on and get past him, be able to pass him and put him in a position of feeling vulnerable to where he's going to have to push it. But then again, does Jet do that with his points lead that he has for the bragging rights of 22-0?
That is, so everyone listening, if you're listening to Title 24 or you're watching us on Peacock, what RV just said is key. And he's exactly right. He's 100% right. And Jet was getting pressured this weekend, and I didn't see where he freaked out. I think he definitely stepped it up for sure. And, you know, he pushed it more, but he didn't ride over his limit. Did he make a couple of mistakes? Of course he did. Dude, the track wasn't perfect. It was brutal. You're going to have little slip ups, but, and I don't, that's what I want to see. I want to see how he reacts. Does he turn it up and the guy is going like crazy? Go back and watch some Jet Lawrence's. And this will be a great reference for everyone listening and watching this show. Go back and watch Jet when he did that gnarly nose wheelie at Anaheim when he was a rookie. Okay. That's riding out of control and doing anything and everything you can for the win. I know it was last lap. I know it was whatever, but the dude was out of control.
Sending it.
Right?
Yep.
I haven't seen that. And that's what I'm basing, like what you're saying and what you and I've been saying. That's what I'm basing it on. I don't see that kind of stuff.
Yep. And little tip overs and things like this, like when he fell at High Point, push the front, you know, like those are little mistakes that are going to happen. I mean, you know, it's motocross racing. Like I said, it was a little mistake, something that he was able to pick the bike back up, catch back up, get back to the lead and win the moto. I think that's even more bragging rights. Hey guys, I fell and I still whooped your ass.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I think that's, you know, how many times have you fallen and got back up and won the race? It's actually more like you pat yourself even more on the back.
Yeah. It feels better, doesn't it?
It feels better. Yeah. Like, dude, I was in the lead. I fell. I got back up and was still able to catch and pass and get the win. I think that's even more of a feather in
your cap. Bro, you're so cocky, dude. You're so cocky. You're so cocky, bro.
I love it.
Yeah, I know, right? So I wanted to play this soundbite from Jason Anderson. He's been in this sport for a long time. He's raced some of the greats. He's done really well. And you wonder, like, I listen to what he says just because he's been there, he's done that, and he sees it. He's in the trenches. I mean, I see him, you know, on TV, and I'll see him ride and, you know, like live, but I'm not riding the motorcycles with these guys. But we have some sound from Jason after the race. Let's listen and see what he has to say.
One of the biggest things is obviously, you know, he's very smooth. You know, he's always has that rear tire connected to the ground, and he's always in the right part of the power. I mean, as for me trying to learn, I think it's wrong for us sometimes to completely change who we are, but I think there's things that we can do to be better, you know, and obviously the way he uses the motorcycle and everything like that is, you know, he has like, it's like every settings, you know, like on like 95, you know, and for us, you know, I think for me, I have, you know, two legs, two arms, and my brain's still intact somewhat that, you know, I have it in me to be able to figure it out and try and be in a battle to be up there, you know, and, you know, it's crazy that he's 19 years old and I'm 30 and I'm learning from him, you know, and it's pretty cool, but, it's changing the game. And I think that comes, you know, a lot. I think obviously back in the day, whenever you saw like Ricky and them, they were just kind of like, more like wide open, like slam and stuff. And it just seems like we're becoming so much more methodical with the way we use the motorcycle and stuff like that. And for me, that's not, doesn't come natural to me, you know? So I'm really having to consciously, you know, try and figure that stuff out. But, you know, that's what we keep showing up and keep trying to problem solve. And, you know, that's what we're addicted to.
All right. I want to comment really quick, RV, because I'd love to share this. I don't even think that I've talked to you about this, but I want to share it with the people tuning in to the pod. So I wrote down some notes here. That's why I'm looking to the side. And I love what Jason says there. There's so much there. He's right about everything that he says. I think for where he's at, well, number one, for sure, I would hang it out. I wasn't worried about being as precise. That was my way to beat certain guys. I knew that if I was willing, perfect example, I knew that that Reedy wasn't going to hang it out. He, you know, he rode right in his limit. His limit was hella fast for sure. But if I was willing to take that risk, I knew that he wasn't going to. And if I could gap him, that would help. But I wrote something down, like, and I think our people will like to listen to this. I said, I was in the same spot he was in, Jason Anderson, with Stu in 2006. I didn't change. So going into 2007, I wasn't going to race the championship because obviously I wasn't racing all year. So in that off season, what I did, and James and I actually talked about this. James was so good at just firing off, right? Those first couple laps, like he didn't need to get warmed up or anything. So that off season, dude, I would take like a siding lap at the practice track during the week, make sure it was good, make sure there were no wet spots, so I could just fire off instantly and do like as fast as I could go within control. But I was going for it, giving it 100%. I actually trained myself, not my riding style, but just how I raced, to where I could be more explosive earlier. And I did more longer sprints. I was doing like 6-lap sprints, 8-lap sprints, like 3 or 4 sets at a time. And that helped me. Like when I went into 2007 racing part-time, to Jason, like he's still trying to learn from this 19-year-old, that he's not necessarily going to change all of his riding style. I did that same thing going into 2007, and I saw massive improvements. Number one, I was able to ride that edge early. And I think also that helped me out with arm pump. My body learned to be explosive early, like my arms did. So I didn't, my forearms didn't blow up. So I think he's right on. I don't think that where he's at, he needs to change his riding style. I think that if he can be a little more precise and be craftier, it's going to be hard to do, just because
you know,
like that saying, old dog, new tricks, can be tough. But I still like how he's a student, and I never think we stop being students. I just told you a story. I wasn't even going for a championship, but I saw the results, and you were always leading, so I don't feel like you ever had to.
Well, I got a question. So what was your previous program leading up previously to that? What did you, would you go out and give yourself a 15-minute warm up and then
I wouldn't do that. I would just, like, instead of 15, I'd go, you know, 7 to 10, make sure it was good. But then when I would start, let's just say, like, if I was doing 220 lappers that day, or 225 lappers on the supercross track, I wouldn't, just my speed wasn't where it needed to be early.
You know? On. Yep.
Because if I did do those sprint laps early, I'd blow up. My arms would blow up. That was always my biggest thing with Stu, or if Reedy, when they had me on the rivet, or all the guys that were a little bit faster than me that given day, they were so good at sprinting early. And when I did that, I could run the speed, but my arms would just blow up. So then I just had to rechange, you know, the way that I practiced.
Yeah.
Did. So that's what.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah. Like for me, unless the track was very, very slippery, overwatered a little bit, we'd kind of just break it in very slowly. But honestly, I'd show up on a Tuesday, get out on the supercross track, do one slow lap for me, like really kind of just like I'm talking rolling every jump. And then I'd go like 2 or 3 laps, like kind of hard to feel out what the traction level was in the main line. And then essentially I looked at it like, I know I'm going to be, Eldon's going to have me out here all day. We're going to be putting in these motos. The least that I put myself out there before I start, like, I feel like I'll be fresher. So I'd give myself like 3 warm-up laps, and that was it, straight into a 20 or 25. So I think that's not that I trained myself that way. I just looked at it as, you know, I guess it was less time on the motorcycle.
Right. You know, that makes complete sense. Did you know, I mean, I'm sure you know about your whole career, but you know, you never lost. And for the people that listen to this show and watch this show, that RV never lost a championship, okay, without getting outside of getting hurt. You didn't win your rookie 2009 450 season, but you were sick, so you only raced 13 times. You didn't win 2010 Supercross because you got injured. Then you won the last 4 SX titles. You won both 2011 and 2013 MX seasons. 2009, you were injured. You missed 2010, 2012 due to injuries. So as far as you and I, like, we had very, very similar careers. And I don't know that a lot of people know that. But, dude, that's gnarly. Like
it is. When I was in it, I never even thought about it. And only, I honestly think recently of the last probably 2 years of really kind of coming back in and really following every single weekend and going to more races and seeing what the guys go through, you know, because I was in it, I couldn't see outside my box. I was stuck in my box and, and being removed for so many years and then kind of coming back in and then coming back into that box, but as a spectator, as a fan, you know, like I said, I'm welcome at pretty much any truck. I can kind of go anywhere, so I can really immerse myself in that and kind of see what the guys are struggling with, or the highs or the lows or whatever that is, to really look back and realize that, like, I think one of the seasons, I won 11 races straight, towards the end of Supercross. Yeah. And to do that, like, is pretty bizarre. You know, and I mean, we're watching Jet do the same thing. It's pretty bizarre. We don't have a lot to talk about from Jet. We're like you said, we're trying to almost make up stories, to see how can he get beat. Right. So, these guys put themselves mentally and physically, and I think more mentally, I think the body forgets pain. So the workouts and how hard it is and all that, as soon as you take your gear off, you get in your air conditioned truck or you get back home, you know, you're like, okay, phew, I'm good. I'm over it.
Did Eldon teach you that? It's a good thing the body forgets.
Yeah, he says the body can forget. And I think I think injuries for me, you know, like I think I noticed that, you know, like knee surgeries or when I blew my ankle up and had five plates and 20 screws put in it. And over a course of two surgeries that were 8 and 9 hours a piece, like the pain and everything and the struggle of that, literally 4 months later when you're like, okay, well, I'm walking, I'm normal. Like, your body forgets the pain, right? It's the mental side that these guys have to deal with. I think that is one of the most critical parts that we don't really talk about that much. Yeah. And I think the reason why we don't talk about it is because it's such a complex conversation of how to read into your head or get into my head or how to make a guy better, how not, you know, what makes this guy tick.
Yeah. What do you think? Let me ask you this, dude. I know you like just kind of listening to what people have to say or reading what people have to say. Like, do you ever feel like they're trying to think what Jet is thinking and possibly maybe Jet's not thinking anything? Like, he's just going,
I think that the guys, that's how I think guys get in trouble. And I can use a scenario for me, and I can use, and I'll speak for
them. Speak for me.
And you. Yep. But I can use a scenario. If I'm going to put words in Dunge's mouth, and maybe I'm completely wrong and maybe I am, but I would say that I think Dunge was more worried about what I was doing. And for me, during the week, never one time did I think, well, what's Dunge doing? How much is he riding? What's he eating? How was he on the cycle? Is he on this? Is he on that? What's he doing? What is he doing to be better than I am? I just looked at, I put my faith and my workload, in my program into Eldon. That's what I did. I paid him to get me into the best position I need to be in. And I trusted the process. I think if you're trying to figure out what's he doing? How can I be better than him? I think you only need to figure out what you need to do and what's going to be better for you and what's going to elevate your program. Not be like, oh, I know Dunge's eating this, or I know he's drinking that, or I think he's doing this. I think that's when you start to tailspin because you're worried about them and you're not worried about your own program.
Yeah, you're being reactive and not proactive. 100%. Yep. That's exactly how I was, because I was like this. You name it, whether it was K-Dub in my early days, whether it was MC, Lusk, you know, then Chad, then Stu. Like, at the end of the day, if they're going to beat me, they're going to beat me. But I'm going to do what I think I need to do. And whatever happens, happens. I didn't think about anything. I wasn't worried about what Reedy was doing during the week. I wasn't worried about what Stu was doing. Now, as far as like thinking, I knew those guys' traits or characters of how they raced. Like, but I didn't worry about it. I'm like, okay.
No, and I think when that came into, when you started to think that way, like the traits and the characters of how they race, that's Saturday morning based on the track, based on the jumps, based on the condition. Okay, it's going to be, It's going to be, it's Anaheim 2. We know the monster trucks have been here. We know the floor is very, very slippery. So I got to watch myself. And mm-hmm. if I watch myself and I put the pressure on James, more than likely he's going to push the front. I mean, that's, you know, if you can get him under enough pressure.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. Or like for me, if we went to a track, like I didn't think about anything like going back to Reedy or Stu on the week, or like I said, even the other guys, like I knew where they were good, but during the week I was doing what I needed to do. And if I got to the race, if the whoops were small, then I'm like, okay, dude, I have a really good shot. You know, like it'll be even playing field. Or if it was hard pack, I'm like, okay, my bike is going to be great tonight. I'll be strong in these parts. These guys will be strong there. I just need to pay attention and take notice of where I need to execute and really put the emphasis on the track, not overthink it, just do it, right? Like just do it. So it's interesting mm-hmm. to think that.
I think that's a little bit like Hayden right now. He has nothing to lose, you know, really. Like I know he's got a championship to lose, but he's a rookie. I don't think anybody really, we knew he was going to be up front, but we didn't think he, you know, I think most people probably didn't think he'd be in this position right now. Mm-hmm. And I think he doesn't think a lot. I think he goes to the line knowing that he's got some of the best equipment, knowing that he's a top three guy, no matter what, and however the cards fall, when the gate drops, he leaves it all out on the track. I think he has nothing else to think about at this point, right? He's just going forward. He's not trying to manage anything. He mm-hmm. hasn't been in a managing situation. He's only been in a push situation, like go forward. And pushed for to close that points gap.
Yeah, totally. Before we get to the quad lock question, really quick, did you see on Racer X where Kiefer and Mathis rode the factory HRC bikes? They rode Hunter's bike. They rode.
Yep, I got told that they were doing that. I haven't seen it yet. What's the results? Do we have results?
So I saw where Kiefer said he rode the bikes, and they all did. And so this is what I want to ask. Like, we're gonna have to watch the podcast, obviously, to see what the results were. But here's what I'm thinking. If Jet's bike handles better, does that mean that he knows how to set up a bike better than Chase knows how to set up a bike? Because you know, okay, that they both have the same opportunity. That's what I feel. Okay, unless there is one certain circumstance, and there might be, so I'm going to say this, I'm going to caveat it with this, and Jet has earned this. If there's only one part, and RV, you know this, that it's going to the points leader. You've earned that right. That's just the way it is. Most of the time, I feel like these guys make, you know, the manufacturers will make two parts, so each guy has an equal opportunity. So, again, like, what if they, I mean, or maybe they just say, they were both good in certain areas. One does one thing good, one does the other. So who do you give the advantage to? Because they all have the same, you know, I'm assuming they have very close to the same opportunities to set the bike up. Where are you at on that?
I think being in Honda's position, being that you have Jet and Chase and being on the very similar equipment, I think I would have to bet, if I'm Lars, that being in this situation without trying to cause too many waves, you know that we know that there's a part coming and we're only sending one in this scenario, because you have two top guys, you don't have a top guy and then you have like a third or fourth place guy. Like I always looked at, like, it was me and Jake, or it was James and Berner, or, you know,
me and Ivan,
you always had a gap, right? Now we have this too. I find it very hard to believe that Japan's not sending two of those parts compared to, you know, a lot of times they'll send one. I think that would just create massive turmoil and hot water. So I doubt that were to happen, but maybe it could. But like to your point, Jet has earned the right to, if that were the case. Yeah. Now, to the setup part, I think that where I think this is what I would do, and I can only speak for myself, I would try to set my bike up to be pretty good everywhere.
All tracks,
all conditions. And I think I could, and I think if I had to guess, that's a little bit of what Jet is doing. And maybe if there is a discrepancy in, in bike setups and the way those motorcycles ride. Like, we don't have the results yet, but is Chase trying to chase after or fix a problem that is now creating another problem on another part of the track, where Jet is looking at, okay, I know the bike doesn't go insides very well. And why I use that is the Kawasaki never went insides very well for me. That's why you saw me on the outside a lot, carrying speed. I knew the strong point of the motorcycle. I knew I couldn't fix it. I knew I couldn't get that Cowie to take the Lions Dunge Road.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So I think is maybe it's something like that. I'm chasing after something that, hey, you're trying to make this section better, but it's actually making this worse over here. And you keep doing, okay, well, now I have this problem over here now, and let's chase that. And okay, we fix that. Now another problem arised over here. Instead of just having an 80% motorcycle or 90% that's good everywhere, and you know that, and you ride it enough to know, okay, Washougal, I got to take the outsides, or Unadilla, I got to do this, or vice versa. You know, you learn you get so in tune with your motorcycle, you know where it's good and where it's not.
Right. Good stuff. Yeah. That's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see what they say. And if some of the guys, like if Mathis or Kiefer, who, I don't even know who else wrote it, but if it's just those two guys, you know, maybe Jet setup is better for one of those guys compared to Chase's, or vice versa. Maybe Chase's setup is better to that specific rider. That'll be interesting to see, but I'm with you. I always used to try to set my bike up similar to yours, like where it worked, you know, good everywhere, not perfect everywhere, but good everywhere, because I didn't want to be changing crap from race to race. And if I guarantee you, if I asked Johnny O this, I'm sure he would tell me, yeah, that they got their bike set up to where it's going to perform pretty good on all conditions. And that, I feel myself personally, I feel that's the way it needs to go. Dude, we got to do the quad lock question and we got to get out of here. So, this quad lock question of the week comes from Oliver46_2. Forkner took another hard hit. Why are some guys more injury prone than others? Dude, he did take a, I felt bad.
He did. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're watching the aerial footage right now. You can see him. This is
bad jump. So let's start there.
Exactly where I was going is we're watching the replay right now for folks that are listeners instead of watching it. You can see big old tire mark down the side of him, man. Getting him cleaned up here. It's
Beyonce.
He knew as soon as that gate dropped, he knew it was over. So at that point, that's where this isn't the first time it's happened. It happened. The reason why he missed all of Supercross and all of outdoors, most of outdoors, is from this same exact thing at Anaheim 1. And tore his ACL and blew his knee all up and had to get it fixed. I think at this caliber, where he's at, as many gate drops as he's seen, I know he's probably in a desperation mode. And that's maybe why some of these bad decisions are happening. But as soon as that gate dropped, he should have known that he was out of it. And at that point, it's managing to get through the first turn. You can see here, he just got totally pinched off and stayed in it. Like, I feel like I don't know what he was looking at. I think for me, that's all I'm looking at is if I'm not in the leader's position and I'm back where he's at, all I'm looking at is where can the carnage come from? Who's it coming from? Oh. You know, that's all I'm doing is looking for what bike's going to come across and chop me off. Who's moving over? Because at that point, even the guys that he got chopped off with, he was behind their bars. And if you're one grip length behind their bars, it's over. You have to give them the right away.
Yep, I agree. And so to answer your question, first of all, Oliver46_2, thanks for the question. That is awesome. RV is 100% right. I don't need to elaborate on it. I mean, it comes down to decision-making. Lord knows I've made plenty of bad racing decisions, especially early on, but I was able to learn, especially those first couple years in the 250 class. It's just like I had a decision to either gas it or not. And I did. And I ended up laying on the ground. I can't blame the track. I can't blame the bike. It was on me 120%. And you just have to, you know, you have to know the circumstances, you have to know your surroundings, and you have to be willing to slow down a little bit. Or, hey, I got First of all, in this particular situation, since we're talking about Fortner, he got a bad jump out of the gate. So automatically you have to be more aware of your situation. And the same thing happened at A1,
It is. And I think the biggest difference is on both of these starts compared to if this would have been a first turn incident, right? That's a little bit different. If you're sitting fifth in the first turn and guys on the inside of you lock bars and completely come across and take you out, that's really not on you. There's nothing you can do about that. That came from the side, hit you from the side. This scenario, we were still going straight. We were still on the straightaway. I feel like he should have been more aware of the situation.
Because he should have let rolled out. It is what it is. He's getting squeezed in. Yeah, and then one, I don't know who we got caught up in.
I don't know, but that sucker drug him down the start straight. A good one.
Yeah, that was it. So there you go. Oliver, DM us, and then our man JH will get you lined up with Quadlock, and we'll get you some great Quadlock product. Thank you, Quadlock, for the question of the week and supporting you. You guys are doing a great job. As far as motorsports this weekend, we got a couple weeks off from the Pro Motocross Championship. However, you can still get your MX fix with Weege and JT on SMX Insider Thursday at 2 p.m. on YouTube. Saturday, the Xfinity Series is in Wisconsin. That's going to be good. 2:30 p.m. Eastern, Road America on NBC. The NASCAR Cup Series is at 2:30 Sunday, this Sunday at Richmond. That's going to be on the USA Network. Make sure you check in, dude. That's a short track. It's going to be epic. And then the World Superbike Check Round. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, of course. That's going to be airing on CNBC. I know that I will be tuned in to the NASCAR race. There was some fire this weekend between Denny Hamlin and Larson. Talked about his displeasure with Denny Hamlin's move. He said, hey, Denny Hamlin says, hey, he was in a position. He could have gassed it or rolled out. He didn't do that. It would have ended up the same way. Larson doesn't think that's the way it went down. Nevertheless, it'll be fun to watch, no doubt. I will say Denny Hamlin runs really good at Richmond, but Kyle Larson won earlier this year in Richmond. That was a long one today, wasn't it, dude?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, just, man, we have so much, you know, so much to talk about, and I think I mean, the lights class, it's really gonna come down to these last three rounds. Who can stay on it? You know, we got two weekends off. I think a lot of these guys are going to get a break here. You know, I think back to when I was racing or you were racing, we're probably back out at the test track on Tuesday. Oh, yeah. We'll get Monday off. We're back out on Tuesday. I think the trend has changed a little bit I think a lot of these guys are going to get a breather, get recharged, and then they'll probably hit either end of this week or start next week and start getting back on it, you know, recharge the batteries a little bit this week and start hitting it hard on Monday. But man, it's coming down to be a great finale for this outdoor championship in the lights class.
That's right. That's right. Hey, thanks to, again, to our great sponsors, United Motorsports, Quadlock Case, and of course, Boxo USA. And remember, if you want a 10% discount, promo code is TITLE24. I know everyone likes to save a little bit of cheddar. You can watch the pod on demand on Peacock, of course, and then the motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. And remember, if you want to listen and not watch, pretty cool. Remember, you can listen to it on the Amazon Music. Head over to amazon.com/NBC Sports to get all the Peacock shows. And always remember, leave your comments and questions. We'll get to them as many as we possibly can. RV, this is my last little vacation, and by the way, we have no show next week. We're gonna be taking off, so this is my last little vacation. It's the last week basically the kids have off before they go back to school. I know this is crazy, but your kids are growing fast. My kids are gonna start their sophomore year of high school, so that's
my Harley.
Dude, tell me about it. But we appreciate everyone. Thank you, everyone.